Hi, Mike.
Hey, Rick.
Welcome to our podcast, everyone. This is the 18 minute and 59 second podcast.
1859.
The reason we picked those numbers is because today at lunch, while discussing making the first podcast, our bill came out to $18.56, which seemed like probably
1859.
Maybe the next one will be a different time. Like, no, we decided that we're going to stick with that for this entire series. 1859 will be the length, which is probably about as much as anybody would ever want to listen to of a podcast, in my opinion. The podcast we're creating today, and I guess in general, the themes are not necessarily tied in any way, but today Rick has come up with the theme of bugs. Why did you come up with bugs? What was the reason for bugs wanting to be your choice for the first podcast?
Well, because I think that everybody has a bug story or several bug stories or a bug phobia or some kind of...
No, I'm guessing this has to do with one story maybe you have in particular that led you to this idea. What's your bug story?
I was at a dinner party with some friends, one of whom was Tim Weiner, who's a New York Times writer. He used to be one of the Mexico City desk guys at the Times. And we got in a long discussion about vegetarianism because I'm a vegetarian and I'll eat no meal that's capable of complaining about being eaten or anything. But we were discussing seafood and the whole issue of whether it's permissible to eat seafood. And I said that I did occasionally eat lobsters because they were basically just big bugs. And at that moment, Tim got up and said, "Well, then I have something for you."
And I already know where this is going.
He disappeared into the next room, and he came back with like a little kind of a glassine bag, like that you would put your crack in or something. And it was full of grasshoppers. And he said that...
Chocolate covered or just like just straight up?
Straight up, man. Actually, I think
raw dog?
With chilies. He chilies, kept saying
really?
That. Well, of course, they said chiles, but there were some chiles on the grasshopper.
So a little bit of heat.
Yeah. So, you know, grasshopper with some salt and some chile. And he said, "You got to try one of these." So it was kind of a big moment for me because I haven't eaten anything really in the insect kingdom before. And, but I decided I was just going to go for it, and I dipped my hand in the bag, and I took out a couple of grasshoppers, and I put one in my mouth, and you know what? It kind of, well...
Chicken?
Yeah, exactly.
Chicken. You haven't eaten meat in 10 years. How do you know? 20
yeah,
years.
I really don't know what chicken tastes like, or pork. No, you know what it did taste like, actually, was one of those, you know, when people eat the little coffee beans, like right out of a jar?
Yeah. What's funny, the whole coffee bean thing, because actually my story of bug eating, not necessarily, I guess, since you're talking about bug eating, about 10 years ago, my father took me and my brother on this kind of man trip down to Ecuador. There was this moment where my father felt like we weren't spending enough time together as the men of the family, and so we went to stay on something called a flotel, which unfortunately it was the dry season, and the Amazon basin was really low, and so the flotel didn't actually float. It was stuck on mud. Each day we'd go and walk around and see different things along the Amazon shore. And at one point we met some indigenous people who took us on kind of a hike and took us to a tree where these ants were just crawling up and down the tree. Like, I don't know if the tree had a specific flavor that these ants liked. But this is kind of where these indigenous people would come for dessert. They were called lemon ants, and he basically, through a translator, told me that they eat these ants, and they take them and use their finger to wipe across, you know, the herd of them. You know, I don't know if that's the right word, a herd of ants across the tree, and then they smush them in their teeth, grind it into the front of their teeth, and it has this flavor, and that's like their dessert. And basically, the guy dared me to eat some, and I figured, you know, what the hell, I'm in the Amazon, and kind of needed to do it, And they were actually, you know, it wasn't bad. It was kind of, it did have a lemony flavor, and I wasn't so grossed out by it. But I also had like little black specks in my teeth for the next, until I brushed at least.
And what was the texture like? Can you describe the texture?
Does it really need describing? I mean, can you imagine what ants would feel like in your teeth?
Did you worry at any point that there might still, that some of them might still be alive?
Not at all, no. And, you know, it's funny because at one point, I'm from Richmond, Virginia, and on days when I was incredibly bored, I'd go to the Richmond Science Museum, and in the lobby, they actually had a jar that had underneath it a sign. The jar was full of insects. It was just like insect debris, wings and legs and, you know, abdomens, thoraxes, and whatever, just piled up in this jar. And underneath it had a plaque that said, "This is the average amount of bugs a human consumes in a year."
1859. When I was in Marfa in 2003, you know, Marfa is just this windswept, completely arid, bleak kind of...
except for this little conglomeration of artists. It's all artists living there.
Yeah, like it's become galleries, and it's become the big sort of art trek.
Zone. So you were there, I guess, on a retreat writing or something.
Yeah, I was working on something. But when I was there, I was told that Marfa had this one period in late spring that was called the tarantula migration period. Uh-huh. And if you were driving in Marfa at that point frequently, you would see the road up ahead of you would be just completely black with tarantulas all migrating across the road.
Nice.
And because I was there in the winter, I never got to see this. But since we both happen to know someone in Marfa right now, I was thinking maybe we should try and call her up and see.
Was that happening right now? I mean, or...
I think it's still winter, so I don't know if the migration will be on. Well, but we could at least,
there, so.
Yeah, we could at least call.
Well, let's check with her.
So we're going to call Fiona now and see if she's had any sighting of the tarantulas. 1859. All right, Fiona?
Yeah.
So when I was in Marfa in 2003, I heard that sort of one of the local features of Marfa was that in the spring, they would have these massive tarantula migrations, like where the road would be black with thousands of tarantulas crossing over it. So what I'm wondering is, have you had any tarantula sightings yet?
If I'd had any tarantula sightings, what would be the odds that I would still be here?
Yes.
I would flee. I have seen no tarantulas. Tarantulae?
Have you heard about this tarantula problem in Marfa? It's not really a problem. I guess it's our problem, but have you heard about this?
No, I've heard no such thing. In fact, the people here are very delicate with the newcomers. They really don't tell us anything.
When you put your shoes on and stuff, have you been making sure to check in the shoe just to see if there are any tarantulas in there or anything?
Nobody has warned me about these things, but now that you mention it, I'm going to be terrified for the rest of my... Are they poisonous?
They're kind of shy, actually.
They're cute and fuzzy.
Yeah, they don't really want to interact with humans all that much, or that's what I've been told, but they are actually a little bit poisonous.
We would be curious to know like what some of your, maybe your worst bug story is, or insect story.
My worst bug story.
Oh shit, hang on. Technical difficulties. 1859. Your worst bug story, start again.
I have a kind of preternatural terror of the cockroach, in fact. I can handle, like, snakes and spiders and, you know, even tarantulas, but I really can't deal with the urban cockroach. So I really don't fare well with them. But the worst thing that probably happened to me cockroach-wise would be, this is in my old apartment on the Lower East Side, and the whole place was infested with roaches, but I did pretty well because I had that boric acid stuff, which if you actually ate yourself would probably kill you. But anyway, I had quite an unhygienic boy spending the night with me, and when we woke up the next morning, there was a cockroach on his face. I woke up right next to him, and I woke up before he did to find the cockroach on his face. Never mind that he was unhygienic to begin with. But I didn't know that until afterwards. So I had to watch the cockroach, like, scurry across his body because I couldn't, like, I was so terrorized that I couldn't actually flick it off of him or move or really just do anything. It was quite awful. Otherwise, when I find them in my apartment, as you well know, I can do nothing except weep and capture them in Tupperware and then wait for my friends to come over to dispose of them while I stand in a corner.
Wait a second. You can do nothing but capture them? How does that work exactly? Somehow you find the will to be able to capture them even though you're really terrified of them?
What happens is I get on the phone with a friend hysterical, and I just start like screaming because I can't handle the cockroach, and basically they have to talk me through the process of retrieving some kind of Tupperware-like object, preferably something that you can't see through, though, because if I can see the roach, it's almost like it's free.
Have you seen any scorpions in Marfa yet?
Okay, it's January. We don't have these creatures here. The closest thing I've seen to wildlife is one antelope and a bone.
1859.
So, Amy, my darling wife, do you have a good story about bugs you can tell us?
It's about a bug in particular. This would have been probably in about 1978. My parents were really into backpacking in the late 70s, and growing up in northern Ohio, we generally would take these camping trips down in the Smoky Mountains in Appalachia. After one of these outings, we realized when we came off of the mountain that we had actually ended up a good 10 miles away. So going against everything we had ever been told about not hitchhiking, my father went out to the main road and hitched a ride back to get the van to come bring us up. And while we waited, we sat on the porch of this completely run-down sort of hillbilly convenience store, complete with a little old lady in a house dress sitting fanning herself on the porch. And as I was sitting, staring at her completely intimidated, I saw, I swear to God, a mosquito about the size of my palm crawling up the screen behind her. That's it.
Did it try to bite you or anything?
No, it was just, it to me, it was sort of symbolic of the fact that I realized I wasn't in Kansas anymore.
1859.
Now, do we believe Amy's story? Because, you know, I mean, she was young and you know, come on, a mosquito the size of your fist?
I believe that Amy believes her story.
Well, right. Is that all that matters? All right. Could be subject to some, you know, embellishment in that.
Yeah.
I think we should ask one more person.
I agree.
Let's get a dude.
1859. I'm in a condo in Sundance.
Excellent.
Sundance, baby.
Right on.
All right, Dean, so did you say maybe that you had a wildlife story that you wanted to share with us where you're going to work bugs in somehow?
So I used to be the afternoon announcer at WUNC in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. And I played music. Our radio studio was in the basement of Swain Hall. It was a former dining hall, and I think we might have been in the men's room, what was once the men's room. And so I did the afternoon shift. It was in the wintertime. The sun was going down around 4 o'clock. And every day around that time, I would hear a scratching sound that was a little odd. It would last about 10 or 15 minutes, and then it would go away. It didn't make too much, you know, of it, until this one day where we were having a downpour. It was just pouring rain, and at one point, through the false ceiling, water just started pouring into the studio, which was really odd because we were in the basement. I really didn't know what to do because, you know, equipment was getting just covered with water. I ran and I got my coat. I covered the turntable with my coat to protect them from this downpour, which then suddenly stopped. And so I thought that was odd for it to stop so suddenly. And so I went and found the source of what had been the scratching for the past couple of days, and I lifted the false ceiling, and there was a tail so long, as if it could have been part of some oversized insect, which turned out to be a possum that had just pissed on my head.
The possum had pissed on you?
Yes, the possum pissed on my head and all over the equipment. Yes, it did.
So wait, I'm confused. I missed something here. Like, what is it? What, insects?
That's as close as Dean could get.
I saw the tail. I looked at that tail. I thought, oh, this is some humongous tail of some.
I see. Okay.
It's from a horror movie.
Okay, we'll let that one slide by. That's an insect story, sure.
Dean, I'm just really proud of you that you saved the turntable. That was your first goodwill gesture, was to save the turntable. 1859.
Olivier Conan on the phone.
Hi, Olivier. It's Rick.
Hey, Rick. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm fine.
So we figured this is our opportunity to ask someone about foreign insects. We want to know about French insects. Do you have any good insect stories? Something maybe that has taken place in your former life when you lived in France?
I love you.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, this is not going to work.
Why not? We can hear you.
Well, that's just not... That's a one-way conversation. That's not a conversation.
Well, all we need to know is to give us an insect story. Tell us something specifically, maybe something that happened in France regarding insects.
I'm going to have to call you back.
Is that your story?
Something came up. No, I really can't think of a single insect story right now. And my life's filled with insects and stories of insects. And they just all flew away right now, this very second.
All right.
I can only think of what.
Well, thank you so much. We appreciate your...
I'll call you back someday.
Okay, bye.
Okay, bye. 1859.
That's the perfect French story about insects, right?
Indeed,
there.
It is. You have any closing?
All right, I'll just tell you this one really short one. And here's my last bug story. I actually used to collect butterflies when I was sort of 10, 11, 12 years old at summer camp. And I got really interested in, you know, sort of the really beautiful ones like tiger swallowtail, black swallowtail, red admirable, monarch, and so forth. So I got back from camp that summer, and my dad in Darien had some kind of a bush. I can't remember what it was. It was probably a butterfly bush.
Right.
And it had all these butterflies around him. So I'm like, wow, this is like shooting fish in a barrel here. I could get any one of these. So, but the problem was that I no longer had my special Carbona-filled kill jar from summer camp.
Right.
So I had to try to jury-rig some poison to kill these beautiful tiger swallowtails around my dad's butterfly bush. So I got a ball jar from the kitchen, and I soaked a cotton swab in like some industrial kitchen cleanser kind, like janitor in a drum or something like that, and put it in the jar. And then I, you know, used my net, and I caught this tiger swallowtail, and I put it in my improvised kill jar. And of course, you know, after 20 minutes or so, no motion. So I assumed that the tiger swallowtail, of course, was dead. So I took it out of the jar, and I took my little mounting pin, and I stabbed it through the thorax and pinned it down on this little mounting board that I was going to use to mount the tiger swallowtail. And of course, all of a sudden, its wings start flapping.
Vlad the Impaler of butterflies.
Oh, I felt so bad.
Oh, it's horrible.
I'm going to hell for that one.
On that note, we've reached our designated time period of 18 minutes and 59 seconds, which was, of course, the price of our lunch today at the Indian restaurant down the street. Thank you so much for listening to our first ever podcast. This is Michael Hurst.
And Rick Moody. We'll see you again at some point with some other exciting topic.
1859. Okay, so we lied. We actually still have 29 seconds left. So what should we talk about for 29 seconds?
Did you hear any good bug stories since we first recorded the podcast?
No, I don't think so.
Because I actually heard lots of them.
All right, well, you got 9 seconds.
9 seconds for
1859 was produced by Rick Moody and Michael Hurst. Special guest Fiona Mazzell, Amy Osborne, Dean Ulsher, and Olivier Conan.